Hey everybody, it's Mark Pattison. I am back with my first episode in quite a long time. As many of you know, I've been on Mount Everest. I'm now returning. I've got a superstar guest today to bring us back. But before we get there, I want to remind everybody, if you want to go to my website and find out what's going on, all these different updates and press releases. We also have an NFL documentary that's coming out in September, which is going to be really cool. More on that later, but you can find that at www.markpattisonnfl.com. And there, of course, you can find all these past podcasts that I've done, over 200 of them now. I've got some absolute superstars from the past. They're really worth going back and listening to, from all different walks of life, different verticals. And of course, I continue to raise money for Higher Ground through my campaign, Amelia's Everest. We're not going to stop there. We're going to keep charging. And, you know, so grateful that people have thrown in over $56,000, including the NFL and the Raiders. So, you know, humbled and appreciative of what everybody has done out there. But, you know, go on there and find the philanthropy tab and you can find your way through and donate what you can and when you can. And as always, I have an ongoing blog, and I love to get out there and speak and tell about this crazy adventure I had on Mount Everest. So anyways, love to talk about that kind of stuff and constantly updating that website. So on that note, let's bounce into today's guest. I'm really excited. This is my first one out. And my good friend, Tom Flick, who I played college football with way back in the day. He went on to have a 7-year NFL career as a quarterback and is an amazing speaker. You should hear him. He told me on a hike that we went on a couple of weeks ago. He said, you know, there's a guy that you need to have on your podcast. The guy's a rock star. He's a mastermind in terms of having all this great knowledge. And of course, I've been so affected by my coaches in the past that I said, you know what, this is the first guy I want to have on. His name is Brendan Sir. He's a longtime NBA coach, not just of the NBA, the CBA, and also in the college ranks. But I mean, I can't even believe the kind of career that you've had in your life. So first of all, Brendan, welcome to the show.
Mark, thanks so much. And Tom Flick is one of my best friends in life. And I think we all value when you have real good friends. I was told many years ago, as a young man, I was told, you know, if you're lucky, if you have five. And I think I know I do. And Tom's one of my five. So, and probably one, two or three. So that he values you and has been telling me about you and your climbs. And I would always say, I'm going to go out and hike with Mark today. I said, don't be a dumbass. Don't be doing that. You know, going out with Michael Jordan and say, we're going to go play one-on-one. No, you're not. You're going to come back from Sun Valley sick. And sure enough, he always overworks himself. So I'm blaming you. But
well, yeah, I've got him by the tail. He and his sweet wife, Molly, I've got them by the tail this weekend coming up here. But, you know, I just staying on that same line, you know, it's interesting, but I've been really, my life has been affected in a really positive way by a guy that I know you have probably mad respect for, Coach John Wooden. And one of the things that I remember and I've read and I've taken to heart, one of the things that he talks about is, you know, to improve your life, surround yourself with five people who are going to make you a better person. And I really feel blessed, you know, staying on the Tom Flick, you know, line right now. We're giving him a lot of love. But, you know, I've told him in front of a lot of people, I've told him to his face that I consider him one of those people, you know, just in terms of the way he lives his life and the type of person that he's become. And he's just got a really strong moral compass and North Star. And it's something that I, you know, I'm always trying to strive for. And I'm sure that you have the same feelings and thoughts.
Yeah, no, we actually met years ago on a plane ride from Seattle to Phoenix. We sat next to each other in first class. Tom, of course, you know, is a big time first class guy, but you know, somehow I bribed my way up there and we flew and we just didn't stop talking for the entire 2+ hours. And, you know, and that started a friendship that has been, you know, it's one of those things that happens. The bad news out of that flight that we had, I unfortunately had walking pneumonia that I didn't know, and I gave it to him, and he was going to be. So he's still my friend, so I'm lucky about that. But He's really great. I love him.
Well, that's awesome. You know, I'm now safely landed back here in Sunbelt, Idaho. We're broadcasting to Baton Rouge. I mentioned before we went live that I actually had the great pleasure of playing down at LSU. We got our butts kicked when I was at the University of Washington. I personally had my best game I've ever had, but as a team, that's what matters. You either win or you lose.
Yeah.
And now you're there and contemplating a move. But the life of a coach, let's start there. So, you know, I don't know really that many basketball coaches, but as you can appreciate, I've got a whole line of in a list of college and NFL coaches that I've known for years. And it really doesn't matter how successful you are. You're going to live a life of a nomad, right? You're going to keep moving on. Either you're moving up or you're moving down because you didn't do well enough, right? And I'm sure you've experienced it all,
both.
Right?
I've done both.
You've done both, and that's just the life. How has that been for you in terms of the way that, you know, especially when you start bringing kids in the picture, and I don't know your personal situation, but you move into a house, you love an area, you love the community, and then boom, either you get an opportunity to uplist or you get blown out. And now what do?
You know, it's funny. My dad worked way back when for Chrysler Corporation and in the car industry way back when I was growing up as kids. Every 2 years, they moved the executives. You know, like they just promoted them into Detroit, to this place. And so we were lucky. We lived in New Jersey. Not that that's lucky, but we lived there. But we never moved. But all of his coworkers and stuff were moving left to right. We then lived in Detroit later on when I was coaching the Pistons. And that's where all the automakers at the time were based. And those people were flying in and out of our community left and right, going everywhere. And so I said to my family when they were young, I said, you know what? A lot of people are in the military and they move. Other people are in different business. Our businesses, we're going to move. And but you know what? It's not sometimes in our control, but you know what? We're going to make the best of it no matter what. And we did some crazy things, you know, several times in our career. Once we had two children, I would leave and go coach, and I would leave the family in the same city just for stabilization. And I could do that in pro basketball because of the season. It was difficult, but I figured let one person be messed up, not the whole family. And that has worked for us. Very few guys do that, but I did that. But, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, you have to have a great wife and your kids. I think they value from moving too. I think they, you know, in the long run they do. And my kids ended up doing it, you know, where they grew up with Dominique Wilkins and Doc Rivers as their friends when they were little kids and their families. And then when we went to the Pistons, they thought Dennis Rodman was the most stable human being in the world. Mm. And, you know, and Isaiah and Joe Dumars and Bill Laimbeer. So they grew up around these kind of people. And I think that really has helped them. And my son, when he was in high school and I was coaching the Magic, you know, Penny Hardaway took an interest in him, and Penny loved to play golf. And next thing you know, my son's got the best set of golf clubs and golf made that Penny got for him. So, you know, my son's birthday is May 28th. Every year that was marking the Eastern Conference Finals, and we would always be playing the Bulls. And Michael Jordan was an incredible friend. And every year my son would get a pair of sneakers from Michael Jordan on his birthday. He thought that was what every kid was getting, you know? Mm. So, you know, I think that that's it. You have to do the best of it. But I think in the long run, I'm blessed that happened. And I feel really blessed to have had the career that I have, being able to coach all over the world.
So let me ask you this. So, and I don't want to fast forward quite yet. You've had some amazing influences, you know, coaching with Chuck Daly, Lenny Wilkins, Seattle guy, by the way, Hubie Brown. But if we go back to your younger days, what was that influence? So, you know, like I already mentioned, you know, the name John Wooden. I didn't play for UCLA and I didn't play for Coach Wooden because I went to the University of Washington. But Don James was such a gigantic, you know, even Al Davis in a weird way, you know, was an influence. Coach Flores, Jim Morris Sr. I mean, there's a bunch of guys in there that really helped like pave like who I am today. And so for you in those earlier days, not who you're coaching with, but the earlier days, who helped, like, this is where I want to go?
Yeah, my mom was an educator. She was a teacher, a high school teacher. And I grew up and I went to Catholic school. And then, and I say this as a young kid in ninth grade in the Catholic school, a nun slapped me in the face when one of my friends was acting up. I got slapped. And I came home and told my mom, I'm out of here. I'm leaving. And she said, you can't. It's a Catholic school and you're on scholarship. I said, well, there's a public school 2 miles from our house, and I'm going there. And that coach was U.B. Brown, who was my high school coach. The Hall of Fame coach is my high school freaking coach. And U.B. was the best teacher in the school, the best coach. He coached football, defense coordinator in football, state championship team, a basketball coach, and a state champion baseball coach. He was just a – and I just said, I want to be who that is. My mom said to me, we're going to send you to college not to be a coach. We were sending you to get an education. And I said, Mom, that's what I want to do. And she really fought back on me. But I did. And I knew very few kids ever know, even when they get out of college, what they want to do. Right, Mark? But I knew going into college what I wanted to do. And so from my freshman year on, I would work at 10 weeks of camp in the summer, basketball camps, week sessions, 10 of them all over the country to learn the craft. And it was my way of developing. And then by the time I'm 21, I haven't even graduated from college. I'm finishing my student teaching. I just finished playing my senior year. And I get a call from Dick Vitale, the ESPN announcer, says to me, hey, come with me to the University of Detroit. I haven't even graduated college yet. Back then, you only had 2 assistant coaches in college. It's not like nowadays where you got like 10 guys lined up. I go there with him. And 2 weeks later, I'm recruiting Tony Dungy at Jackson Parkside High School. And he says, Coach, I'm like 2 years older than Tony. And we laugh about it to this day. I said, you have to come to the University of Detroit. He said, Coach, I'm first team All-State in football. He said, you don't have football at the University of Detroit. I said, if you don't come out and meet Dick Vitale, my new head coach, I'm going to get fired. And he did. He came out. And Vitale meets with him, Mark, and he says, hey, I want you to come to University of Detroit. You know, we're going to revitalize the Motor City, and all that crap. And the next thing you know, Tony says, but I'm first team All-State quarterback, and I'm a defensive back. You don't have football. And Vitale says, I'll bring it back to the University of Detroit. And Tony went to Minnesota, and then we've been great friends ever since, and we laugh about it to this day. But so I was around great people, and then UB brought me to the NBA at 28 years of age to be a coach. I didn't know anything about what the hell I was doing. Only 2 assistants on a team back then also. And that was my, just giving me that thing of, 30-plus years in the NBA, coaching the best players in the world. And learning the business. So I look at myself somewhat like Belichick in that he started at a really early age, but he started in low positions. I never started in low position. I always started in a really high position, but I thought when I started out making $9,000, I hit the lottery, And nowadays, if I offered a kid $9,000, he'd say a month, to work. So I feel absolutely blessed. And I learned from each guy that I worked with. I learned, and to quote our friend Coach Wooden, who became a dear friend after he was finishing coaching, he said, it's what you learn after you think you know it all that's going to make you a good teacher, coach, Mount Everest climber, et cetera. It's when you think you know a lot and you keep learning, that growth mindset, that's when it's really going to take off for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, it certainly sounds like, and this always plays into things, which is one, preparation meets opportunity. And then there's a little bit of luck in there, right? Because you happen to be in the right place at the right time and with the right guys who just, the high school, Hubie Brown was a great example, right? Well, you could have stayed at the private school or you could have been growing up in Florida, right? And you wouldn't have had that experience. And it's just so impactful what our educators, whether you want to call them coaches or true teachers, can have, or mentors in business, can have that true impact on people, that they walk out of the room like, I want to be like that guy, right? We talked earlier about Tom, you know, Tom's a professional speaker, Tom Flick, professional speaker. But I remember back in, even when I was a Husky, I didn't know, I'm a freshman, he's a senior, he's the captain, he takes us to the Rose Bowl. And he was just one of the only seniors on the team that actually talked to me. And he really taught me about grace, and he really taught me about respecting all people, because at the end of the day, you know, it doesn't matter that if you want a strong team, and we'll get into this later about your leadership, you know, it's always the weakest link that provides the strongest team, right? You don't just have one person. You need that whole group.
No, I mean, in, you know, moving around on this, when we had the best team in professional basketball, the Pistons, the Bad Boys,
yeah,
everyone says, well, Isaiah Thomas was your leader. Well, we had one of the greatest coaches of all time in Chuck Daly, but we had six guys on the team that were leaders. We had amazing internal leadership. And that's when you, if your coach is the only one leading, you're in trouble. So you have to have that internal leadership, the buy-in from your players. And, you know, I think to be a terrific coach is the same skill set of a parent. I tell coaches, if you're not a terrific parent, forget being a great coach, because the same skill sets apply. You know, you have to have unconditional love for your players. And I mean, I speak to men all the time. I have one of the biggest coaching practices in the country, in the world, actually, and sports coaching. And many of the men that I coach that have become dear friends, Tom Flick included, John Gordon, a great author.
Oh, John.
When I hang up the phone with those guys, Doc Rivers, Billy Donovan from Chicago Bulls, when I hang up the phone every time, the last thing that's said by both parties is, I love you, man to man. And I think that is one of the keys. If, you know, you have to, they know the love is coming out. And my children, son 38, daughter 35, they're incredibly successful, way more than my wife and I deserve. Every time they hang up the phone, my son, love you, Dad. I mean, I don't say you have to say this to me, you have to get your allowance. I still give them an allowance, of course, you know, but you know, it's just, that's what really helps. That, so as coaches, we have the most influence you can ever have over a player. And so that's that platform you talk about, Mark. Yeah. You got to use it, and it's got to be natural.
It's incredible. Like you just mentioned about having that vertical leadership, you know, that works up. And right when you said that, there's a couple of examples that came to me, and mainly because I was such a huge fan. I was playing professional ball at the same time, different space. But, you know, the great Casey Jones had Larry Bird out there, right? And it's not just one, it's a bunch of, you know, all those guys were all leaders in their own way. Danny Ainge. And then I think about the Lakers and with Magic, right? And what he went through, Phil Jackson with Michael Jordan. But of course, there was Scottie Pippen and the other guys that were on that team. And, you know, if you want to have great teams, and I've been on some great teams, you got to have that top down, you know, where everybody's rowing in the same direction. And I think, I don't know if John Gordon said this, John has been on this podcast about a year ago, but if you don't have everybody off the bus, man, you got to get that person off and get them rowing in the right direction.
100%. And PJ Flick, head coach of Minnesota football, he and John just finished a book last week called Row the Boat. And it's about never give up philosophy, but the boat only goes the right way if everyone's rowing that way, you know, and it's the same thing in life and that alignment that we look for. But I try to take everything, like right now, and my stage of my life, it's not about basketball. It's about everything. And so, I enjoy coaching 12 to 15 guys, but I'm trying to now impact thousands and hundreds of thousands of people. That's where I think you really make your mark. And so that, not mark, I'm not trying to make a mark, but trying to influence if you can. Yeah. And that's what I'm into. That's because, you know, I never thought when I started, you know, I just wanted to play ball. I didn't have any aspirations of doing anything. To all of a sudden, when you get this platform, it's silly if you don't take advantage of it, if you don't thrive. And that's really where my life has gone. And to think that, you know, I've been coaching Tom Flick for nearly 20 years as his personal coach and John Gordon for 15 years. I have so many people outside of sport that I coach. And from that, we developed incredible friendships. And that's the strongest thing, you know, you get in your life when you can help other people get better. You know, I say that I always say, when if Flick and I always talk about, like, I'll learn from him, he'll learn from me. And something I learned from Tom, I gave him credit for it once. Today is the second time. And Tom told me years ago, he said, coaching is about taking people where they can't take themselves. And I said, God, I love that. And that's the same as parenting. Parenting is taking your children where they can't take themselves. Mm. And it's about teachers taking students. And it's about business managers, supervisors, leaders taking people where they can't take themselves. And obviously in sport, taking players where they can't take themselves. So that's kind of where my whole head is at on this stuff. But that's leadership, I guess, you know, where you want to go. You know,
so that's awesome. And I want to jump into that in a few minutes. I want to ask, sure, you know, some of these impactful coaches. Chuck Daly is one of the best coaches that has ever coached in the NBA. As you mentioned, he and, you know, the GM, all of the management team, I'm sure you're involved in that, built world championship teams back to back. You had some phenomenal players. You mentioned some of them, Isaiah Thomas, Dumars, Rodman, Laimbeer. And there's a guy who I'm spacing his name, but he went to my high school in Seattle, Roosevelt, James Edwards.
Buddha Edwards.
Yep, right. So he was another guy
center. Fabulous.
Yeah, yeah. So what did you take, like, why was, you know, again, you're talking about these influences and these impactful leaders, and it goes up and down. You know, people like Tom Flick learn, sure, from you, and then you learn from guys like Chuck Daly, and Chuck learn from somebody else, right? There's a whole tree. What did you take away from Chuck Daly? Not only what, I think you guys were also, you guys also coached the Dream Team, right?
Yeah, we had a Dream Team, and then, you know, we went on and we took lesser teams like the New Jersey Nets and Orlando Magic and turned them into winners, you know, also. So, but I think what it came down to, Chuck had the, of all the people I've ever worked with, there was never anyone, Mark, that had this rare talent. It's not something rare talent to be able to connect with everyone. Usually people can connect to people of their own race, their own age, their own set of values. It didn't matter who you were. This guy could connect. He had the ability to get right into the mind of a player, a superstar player, or the 10th, 12th man on the team. It's just something that just God gifted him with. And he was just this amazing communicator in general. And it wasn't because he was the most articulate person. It just, he knew what to say at the right time. And I loved it, you know.
There's so many questions I could fire away. Did the, like, on that team of those, all those superstars, like, is it, I mean, each one, I'm looking at all these names that you have. Dennis Rodman, you'd mentioned him earlier, right? And I don't think you'd realize his full potential at that time, even though he was really emerging and becoming a great rebounder. But, you know, was it Laimbeer that would provide the attitude, or was it Dumars, the way he fed people, or was it Isaiah Thomas with all of his flash? I mean, who was that like was really that source on the team that drove you guys to that championship?
You know, it's a combination. It's never one little thing. It's a combination. Mm-hmm. They lost in the seventh game to the Lakers by 2 points, 1988. Isaiah had a terrifically sprained ankle in game six. With an ankle that was nearly broke, he scored 25 points in a quarter, limping around on the court. One of the most historic moments in NBA history. the Raiders, the LA Raiders at the time, through Al Davis, really adopted our team because we played so physical, so tough. He loved that. And he's, you know, and so they opened up their practice facility to treat Isaiah. The Lakers were all pissed off because of it. And we're in Los Angeles, you know, they're in Los Angeles at the time. And I remember the next year when I joined the team, here's all this Raiders gear with your name and your number on it, because we're the bad boys. We're like the Raiders. And so they had a mentality developed, and it fit. These were guys that loved, they were almost like the WWE guys. They just wanted to, we wanted to go into a building, Chicago Stadium or Lakers Forum at the time, and just go in and kick your ass and quiet the crowd. That's the mentality they had. They thought that was the greatest thing they could do when they could. And they just love to play on the road. Most players in basketball hate to play on the road because the crowd is so close, so intimidating, and the referees are so influenced by it. These guys cherished it. And they won because they were mentally tougher and physically tougher than the other teams. They were the ones. They influenced the rule changes in the NBA because they were so physical. They laugh now at when they see all these flagrant fouls called in the NBA. There barely would be fouls in the old days, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the people say, oh, it was bad for basketball. But it was the highest TV ratings ever were during that time. You know, people appreciate that blue-collar type of thing. And we were not the best players in the league. We played the hardest in the league. We were the most physical. And they showed up every night. So that's what, you know, they did. And I think it was a mindset of the entire group, Mark. You can't want one or two guys to be tough. You have to all buy into it. And that's what all the players did. I wish I could say this was the culture that as coaches we create. We had nothing to do with it. Hmm. This was all internally done.
Yeah, you had a lot of tough guys on that team. As you look at the the dream team, so what year was that?
That was 1992.
1992. And so you, in my opinion, have the greatest collection of NBA talent ever assembled on one floor. Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, John Stockton, Karl Malone. I mean, the list, it was insane. Every guy, all-star, Hall of Famer, amazing. What was the most surprising thing that you found in that experience of, you know, I've seen TV specials on the, you know, and I remember that time too, where you just get on the bus and that was a show, right? Yeah. Michael Jordan. I mean, just like, what was there anything in there that surprised you, or did you go over there knowing we're going to kick everybody's ass and we know this is going to be a big circus?
Well, I think it all starts like it always does with, you know, as you would say, the vision. What's the vision going to be? Mm-hmm. And so these guys had never experienced the first time we ever allowed professionals to play in the Olympics. So Michael Jordan had played in the Olympics, Patrick Ewing, as amateurs in college. And so now when we met and, you know, at the Sheraton La Jolla down in San Diego area for our first practice, and we gathered as a team, we had 12 players on the team. You know, Chuck Daly said, there's two things we have to understand. Number one, we have to commit ourselves that we're going over there. We have to win the gold medal, or basically we're not going to be allowed back in this country. That's the vision. Number two, we have to be on time. And when he said, you got to be on time, I'm saying, what the hell is he talking about? But this is how smart he was. He said, guys, if we're not on time, and he points right at Jordan, and you got to remember, the Pistons and the Bulls are tremendous enemies, right? So he says, if we're not on time, that means that, Michael, you don't respect Magic. And if Magic, you're on time, you don't respect Barkley. And Barkley, that means you don't respect Drexler. And Drexler, that means you don't respect Karl Malone. And he went right down. So it wasn't about being on time, it was about respect. So the next morning, we're going to have practice at 11 a.m. at the University of California, San Diego. And I go out to see about an hour ahead of time if the bus is there to take the players to practice. And I look out there, sure as the bus is there, doors open, no driver. I walk on the bus to see if it's going to be our bus. And there's one player on the bus an hour ahead of time. It's Michael Jordan in the back. Mm. 1 hour ahead, the greatest player in the world is sitting there to make sure he's on time. So for the 6 weeks that we were together as the Dream Team, the closest any time anyone ever came to being late was 20 minutes early. That's where we won, on respect. And Chuck had told them, you can't worry about how many minutes you play, how many shots you get. All we got to focus on is winning a gold medal. And yeah, and they all bought into that. And I think that was one of the things that we did. Now, I'll also tell you this, Mark. This is the thing that a lot of people don't. That was, on paper, a lot of those guys were the best, but that wasn't the best team we could have put out there. Isaiah Thomas wasn't on the team because of the jealousy between him and some of the other stars.
Yeah.
John Stockton was on. No disrespect to John. I love John. But he was on the team, and he even got hurt, and he wouldn't go off the team to let Isaiah take his place. We had to have one college player on the team.
Christian Laettner. Christian
Laettner. We didn't get a vote on that as coaches. If we had, we would have put Shaquille O'Neal on the team over Christian Laettner. But Coach K, who was one of our assistants, put his own guy on there, Christian Laettner, over Shaquille O'Neal.
How did he fit in? You know, here he is, a college player. How did he fit in with the group?
Not at all. Not at all. Yeah, I mean, it was like 11 player team, and he was hanging around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, these players on the other teams around the world are amazingly good. But I think that was, and the thing that also grabbed me from that was, I never thought that these guys would have the impact. This is where the brilliance of David Stern, the commissioner, came out. He and the head of FIBA knew that this would change the world of basketball, and it did, to the point where the players on the other teams wanted autographs and pictures. They weren't even worried about playing against it. They just wanted that. They wanted to be seen with those guys. We would go to games. There would be thousands upon thousands of people out there just to see the bus leave, go to the game. And I think we won by an average of 47 points a game. I mean, it was crazy. And now you got to struggle every time to win these international games, because 20% of the NBA now is international players. And these players have gotten so good. The coaching is so good in Europe and Australia. It's really fantastic what has happened. And now when we played the Olympics, even back in 92, where television wasn't like it is now, over 2 billion people saw the games. And that turned the world on to basketball.
Yeah, incredible moment in time. And like you said, kind of elevated in a big time way the exposure of the NBA. And, you know, I mean, there was a lot of big wins back in those days. And certainly that was one. Magic and Bird coming in the league, that was another one. So it was cool to see. So let's turn the corner. And I want to talk about your business. I think it's Off the Court. And again, the one thing that's really cool that you've done is you've taken all this collective amazing experience from all these, you know, from the players that you've mentioned, that you've been around, that you know personally, that they know you, they call you friend, to these coaches like Coach Daly and Lenny Wilkins, and there's many, many, many others. You know, we're not even, I haven't even talked about the assistant coaches, and there's a sea of those, of all these guys, and then the people in management, the GMs, you know, that are out there, but. The cool thing is that you've reinvented yourself and to a place where now you can really offer that gift of mentoring, coaching, whatever word you want to use, to help other people. I think you mentioned this, to take people where they haven't actually been or where they don't know they want to go. Tell me more about that.
Well, you know, years ago, I think it might have been when I was with the Pistons 30 plus years ago, I was making so much money as a coach outside of coaching, television, radio, speaking engagements, camps, that my agent at the time said, we have to have a corporation separately, you know, because the Pistons are paying you, but you have to do something with all these other buckets of money are coming. So I said, and my agent said, well, let's just call your company Off the Court Inc. And it was brilliant because it was everything I made off the court. And I still have it. It's 30 plus years old, the company. And now we've kind of, you know, we've kind of done that. And it's been just fantastic as far as, you know, being able to do that. Because one of the things that happened is that, you know, it just allowed us to go into different ventures. Like we do, we have a podcast also where, you know, we have 300 plus episodes or whatever, you know, of coaches that are in 146 countries. People listen to it weekly. But the thing we've done to monetize is we have sponsors. And so we have business partners and, you know, and it's a lot of money compared to what I made as a coach. Sometimes I laugh at it, you know, just on the podcast. It's free to the people that listen, but, you know, the partners are the ones footing the bill. And then, you know, we do maybe the top basketball coaching clinic in the world in Las Vegas at the NBA Summer League, where we have the best NBA coaches. That's our faculty to teach, to share and develop coaches from around the world. We have coaches from all over that come. And then we video it and we sell them to coaches in 160 plus countries around the world, streaming video. So we're trying to figure out ways to keep growing the game. And we've done the same thing in business where, you know, I personally coach people in business, have for years now, you know, on leadership and from the highest C-suites down. I love mentoring. I love coaching younger coaches. So I just, anything I can do to help people, that's kind of where my thing has been. I'm not one of those guys to get into bars and restaurant businesses and things like that. I just stay in an area that I know I have credibility in, where I can really impact and influence people. And that's been, you know, we last year we had so many people coming out of the pandemic that during that time they were following us on Zoom calls and our podcast. We couldn't do our clinic. We were literally getting coaches, men and women, that said, why don't you represent coaches? And I said, well, you know, we'd never thought of it. And so we now got in that business where we represent coaches in their contracts, which has really been fun for me, high school, college, not high school, obviously, pro and college coaches. And so that's fun, you know.
What do you think the biggest gap is? Like, when did you see a pattern of when people come to you looking for a higher purpose to elevate where they are, is there a general question? They come to you and they say, my gap, my problem, my, you know, where I'm trying to do is fill this void in my life. Is there some common theme that you see?
No, most of them don't see any gaps in their life, ironically. They're ready to roll. Usually the biggest problem is, they haven't put in the work. They want to skip steps, as I like to call it. You know, the way that I developed, not that I'm saying I had a great career path, but, you know, I paid my dues and I learned, you know, as a college person, you know, I'm out there working, you know, where kids are maybe going to summer school now. I was out working on my craft for 10 weeks. I would go to different expert coaches around the country where they would teach me and let me coach as a 19, 19, 20 year old. I'm coaching and teaching. And all of a sudden people are saying, that guy's a really good coach. And he's like, he's not even a college graduate. So I think, and the other thing, Mark, that I think there's so much emphasis on money nowadays that if you tell someone that you got to start here to go there, you know, I'm sure Tom Flick started, I think he did over 1,000 speeches either for free or for $100. And now when he makes a lot of money, people say, oh, you're lucky. No, that was because he worked his ass off to get there because he had prepared himself and did the small things. And frankly, at times messed up maybe a talk, but he did it. And then he grew and learned from his mistakes. And I just think that's the right way to go. But impatience is a big item nowadays. If things don't work out, a lot of people don't have resilience now. You know, my whole thing is based on, your mindset. I think nowadays, I think it's our greatest area to try to improve coaching in life is through your mental skills. And, we're at an unprecedented time in our country of suicide. 25% of all the college-age kids between 18 and 22 contemplate suicide during the pandemic. That's frightening. A quarter of this greatest country in the world contemplated killing themselves during this time. That's a damn shame. Oprah's got a great little TV show out now called The Me You Can't See. And I think that's the thing right now. You and I and Tom and a lot of people have friends that all of a sudden we say, yeah, so-and-so took their life. Oh, I talked to him 2 weeks ago. It seemed fine. Mm. Yeah. But we don't know what's going on behind there. Mm-hmm. And so hope, is such a huge thing. If you lose hope, if you lose that resilience, if you lose self-control, those are when people, it could be from losing your job. And so I think those are areas that I think are game changers for people in life. And that's what I'm really now into is how can I help change the world? And people go, are you freaking nuts? No, that's where I'm at right now. I don't really care that much about basketball. I want to be part of helping to try to change the world. And that's kind of where I'm at.
A lot of those things that you just said as I was listening, not the suicide part, but the other things about grit and resilience and not giving up, the mental aspects, you just kind of summed up my whole Everest, sure. trip. And a lot of times, like, how did you, I can't believe you're going to Everest. And I said, well, let's go back to the NFL. I didn't go from Little League to the NFL. There's a whole bunch of steps I had to go through. And just like the mountains, I started on little ones and I worked my way up and more advanced and learning how to deal with crevasses and avalanches and climbing ice walls. And, that's not one big giant leap. That is a whole lot of years, to do the 7 summits for me took 9 years to do. And I got pushed back and ran into all kinds of stuff, that I had to overcome. But, it's just a lot of times, and this is probably a lot of the things that why you're so good at what you do is because sports becomes metaphorically what life ultimately becomes in terms of the ups and downs that we have to navigate. And so it's really cool stuff. Where can people find you?
2 places. They can follow me on Twitter at Brendan Suhr, BRENDANSUHR. Or at coaching_U, letter U, big letter U, are our 2 Twitter sites. We have my personal site. We have a lot of followers, but my Coaching U site is 60, 70,000 people. And it's all good stuff about yourself, how to, improve. And then, I recently became partner in a high-tech company called MindView.com, and MindView. com. And that's where we've actually developed our founder, Brian Davidson, Dr. Brian Davidson, a 38-year-old freaking genius, has developed over years a assessment, Mark, that you would be fascinated with, and I want you to take it, where all of a sudden in 10 or 15 minutes on your phone, we can throw out 120 questions for you to respond to. And then immediately there'll be a score for you in 13 mindset skills. Mm. And I'm telling you, it's the way you're thinking and feeling right now. So God forbid if you lost your job, you went through a divorce, you're having some really bad stuff happening, it's going to be so reflective in that score. Many times in life, the people that we're working with or stuff, we don't know what's going on in their life. And so we think they're fine if we're fine. And what we're finding out is they're not. And so that's where I'm trying to get this into, we're really working hard at the military. You know, we have 1.2 million active military. We have 33 million veterans that all of a sudden we send these guys out to do amazing, horrific things. Sometimes they come back. They really have trouble getting back in our society. We can really see where they're at. So I just think, you know, mindset and your skills, it's not like your personality, which will be the same all the time. These things change based on circumstances that happen in life. And I think it's just amazing what we can do. And that's why I think the greatest area of advancement is going to come from in there. As football guy going through the combine, we could always measure how high you could jump, how fast you could run, how much you could lift. We could say, oh, Mark's going to be a perfect prospect. But what we couldn't measure what was in here and here. Yeah. What's in your heart. This helps. This really helps.
Love that.
That's what I'm excited about.
Love that. Love that. Listen, appreciate you coming on, sharing. I mean, your experiences are unbelievable and amazing. And, you know, for me not doing a show in 2 months to come back and hit this with a lot of firepower, you know, thank you so much for coming on and sharing those experiences.
Mark, you're a dream teamer, man. And I'll tell you what, when I come up to Sun Valley the next time, I'm going to go for a walk with you, but we're not going up any damn hills or anything.
We'll go downhill. All right. There he is. Brendan Sir, thank you so much.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.